This is Pittsburgh Explainer, a new podcast from 90.5 WESA. Every Friday, our reporters help you understand some of the biggest news stories from southwestern Pennsylvania. Thanks for joining us. I'm Chris Potter, in for Liz Reed, who's out this week.
I'm Sarah Bowden, health and science reporter.
I'm Lucy Perkins. I cover government and accountability.
I'm Reed Frazier. I cover energy and environment for the Allegheny Front and State Impact Pennsylvania.
It's Friday, March 6th. Area organizations have taken precautionary measures as the coronavirus spreads, and Senator Bob Casey says the issue needs more leadership from the White House. Allegheny County has a new health department director, and Democrats are looking warily at the issue of fracking this election season, with Western Pennsylvania voters near the top of their concerns. We'll dig into all of these stories right after the break.
This is Ira Glass with This American Life. I'm coming to Pittsburgh to give a talk that I call Seven Things I've Learned, which is basically just an excuse to tell a bunch of stories and play clips and play video and talk about how we make our radio show, talk about stuff we have not put on the air and never will put on the air, and talk about things I've seen as a reporter that have stuck with me. It's Saturday, March 21st at the Byam Theater. Tickets at trustarts.org/humanities. Again, trustarts.org/humanities.
And we're back. Sarah, you've been reporting all week on preparations for the coronavirus, or COVID-19 to its friends, I think. As we're recording this podcast Thursday at noon, no cases have been reported in Pennsylvania, but local officials and healthcare providers say they're ready for it if it comes. What do these preparations include, and are we all going to die?
We're definitely not all going to die. But please don't hoard masks. Health systems are making sure that they have enough personal protective equipment for workers. That includes masks, gloves, gowns. They're making sure that facilities where patients who have COVID-19, which is the disease caused by coronavirus, they're making sure that those facilities are up and running. And they're also encouraging people to wash their hands, practice good cough and sneeze etiquette, make sure their freezers and pantries are stocked up. And also, they've increased screening and protocols, so they're on the lookout for possible coronavirus COVID-19 cases.
But already we have seen, that sounds like great stuff to kind of ward off the onset of this disease, right? But we're also kind of talking about organizations, institutions already kind of taking steps, right?
Yes, businesses and corporations around the Pittsburgh area and nationally have canceled a lot of business travel. Local companies, workplaces are preparing for in case we have to work remotely here in Pittsburgh. So that might mean telecommuting. Also, local universities have canceled all spring break travel. And they're encouraging students, if they choose to travel abroad on spring break, to practice social distancing when they come back.
There have been places elsewhere where this disease has already kind of taken hold, already concerns in Seattle and some other places there. There's been talk about people coming back from countries where coronavirus is an issue, China most of all, putting those folks in quarantine. If that were necessary here in Allegheny County in Western Pennsylvania, what would that look like?
Quarantine is when you isolate someone who hasn't developed symptoms of illness yet, but they might. So basically, they would be kept away from other people. And I do know that the Allegheny Health Department is looking for possible quarantine sites. And I spoke with Dr. Luann Brink about this. Can you just give me a little bit more information on that?
I'd rather not do that. We're not in a position where we have to use anything like that, so I don't really want to talk about that.
What would be the reason for not kind of sharing with you a little more details about that stuff?
It could be because they don't want to freak people out. It could be because they're very early into looking for quarantine sites. They won't tell us, but we do know that the Allegheny Health Department is in the process of preparing for quarantine if that is needed here.
And so in the middle of all of this going on, the Allegheny County Health Department also announced a new health director, Dr. Deborah Bogan. Sarah, what do we know about her?
She's a pediatrician at UPMC. She's also the volunteer medical director at the Milk Bank in the Strip District, which she is one of the founders of that institution. And she's been practicing medicine here in Pittsburgh for about 20 years.
And I'm sure she was asked about the coronavirus by reporters when she met with them earlier this week. What does she have to say about it?
She deferred all those questions to staff at the health department who have been dealing with preparedness for the possibility of coronavirus outbreak here in Allegheny County. And she says that she's been reading up and making sure that she's prepared for when she starts at the health department on May 4th.
The other health issue here, and it goes back way a lot further than the coronavirus, is concerns about industrial pollution. Dr. Bogan's predecessor, Karen Hacker, often had to sort of deal with controversies stemming from U.S. Steel's facilities, in particular in the Mon Valley. Did you get any sense from Dr. Bogan about kind of what her posture would be with respect to those concerns?
Yeah, she said that she's aware that that's an issue. She understands that when it comes to asthma, especially with pediatric patients, air pollution is an issue here in Allegheny County. She was very circumspect. And I'm really curious to see how department policy will change when she takes the helm in May. I haven't noticed policy changing that much from when Karen Hacker left to the interim director. So I'm very curious to know if the department will stay its course or if with Dr. Bogan's clinical experience with pediatrics, maybe the department may become perhaps even more aggressive when it comes to regulation.
This is Reed here. Sarah, on that note, I know that environmental groups and community activists have really wanted to get more, the county to get more aggressive on U.S. Steel, especially the Clairton Coke Works. What will you be looking for in terms of like what actions this new director could take to get quote unquote tougher on U.S. Steel?
I'm very curious to see if there will be more penalties, more lawsuits. I think that's what a more aggressive stance looks like.
Lucy, switching over to you, U.S. Senator Bob Casey of Pennsylvania, also focusing on the coronavirus, yeah, as many of us are. And he had some tough words for President Trump this week, who he criticized for not taking the coronavirus more seriously. What exactly was he concerned about?
Well, Senator Casey had a lot of different concerns. With respect to the Trump administration, he wanted to be very clear that all elected officials at all times need to be telling the truth and providing accurate information to the public. He thought it would be a better idea if President Trump left all of that public communication to professionals, the scientists and people who have expertise in the medical community to talk about the coronavirus.
So talking less would be a good thing for the president to do by Senator Casey's lights.
Yeah. And one of the things that the Trump administration has been doing that it's gotten a lot of criticism for is, you know, instead of deploying heads of various organizations like the NIH or the CDC, they have sent political appointees and, you know, Vice President Pence to go around to talk shows and talk about the virus instead of having, you know, medical experts and scientists talking about the risks.
There is talk going through Congress about providing funding for addressing this issue. What exactly, what kind of money are we talking about here, and what kind of services would it provide or help subsidize?
Yeah, so this is a supplementary appropriations bill that the House passed this week. It provides almost $8 billion in funding to a lot of different agencies to try and combat this public health threat. It would include rapid response funds for the Centers for Disease Control. It would provide more funding for public health and social service funds. And another thing that Senator Casey really emphasized when he was talking about this is that it provides more than $1 billion in funding to reimburse state and local health departments who are going to be on the ground dealing with any effects of the coronavirus. And it also provides funding for the National Institute of Health to work on research for a vaccine development. Here's a little bit of what the senator said.
Federal government should work with companies to make sure that workers aren't penalized because they're following the directive to stay home and they lose pay. That shouldn't happen.
What exactly are we talking about here?
He did not really elaborate, and I'm pretty sure that the legislation that we're talking about here does not address that issue in particular. Earlier this week, Senator Casey attended a committee hearing on Capitol Hill where they talked about addressing the coronavirus in the U.S. And he was critical, again, of the Trump administration. He talked about the use of junk plans, their short-term health care plans, that they often have a pretty low premium but don't cover a lot of different things. And he did go into detail on that. He was critical of the administration for promoting these sorts of plans. He mentioned a guy who, you know, was worried about having the coronavirus, so he went and got tested and then couldn't afford to pay for those services.
Yeah, I mean, this has obviously been an issue that Bob Casey actually shows signs of life on.
Yeah, healthcare is a big issue for him.
Yeah, I mean, was he sort of pounding the table in your discussion? Because he has in the past, right? I mean,
no, he wasn't. And, you know, I think part of that is because a lot of elected officials are trying to provide accurate information, not overhyping the issue and being more alarmist than they have to be.
Right. But of course, the backdrop of a lot of this, Reed, and we turn to you here, is the fact that we do have this presidential election coming up here in November. Democrats hoping to wrest the White House back from Donald Trump. You've had a story that touches on health and environmental concerns, specifically related to fracking for natural gas here. Now that Elizabeth Warren has dropped out this week, that really leaves Democratic voters with Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders as the two Democratic frontrunners.
Well, you have one candidate in Bernie Sanders who says he wants to ban fracking. Elizabeth Warren, when she was running, was in favor of that position too. And Joe Biden, who said, you know, basically, nah, we're going to ease oil and gas out of the system at some point gradually. So you have two very different message points on oil and gas and climate change. And a lot of people have wondered, hey, wait a second, Pennsylvania is a really important electoral state in November. If you have a candidate who says he wants to ban fracking, and there's a lot of fracking in Pennsylvania, is that going to hurt or help the Democrats?
I mean, a lot of national outlets have come through in the past couple months. There's almost a cottage industry of these guys coming in saying this will be a disaster for Democrats potentially because it could cost Western Pennsylvania, maybe the state, maybe the country. Is that what your reporting turned up?
I mean, maybe it could. I really don't know. And I've talked to a lot of voters now about this issue, and I still kind of don't know. So I'll just start with that. There have been a couple of polls on this very issue. Do you want to ban fracking? And they've basically been within the margin of error around 48-39 in favor of banning it in one of them, and the other one was 44-42 against banning it. You know, these are two polls, and we know polls can be wrong, but they basically show that voters in Pennsylvania are split on this issue. And it's not entirely clear to me that there's some big subset of voters out there who would be cool with voting for Bernie Sanders, who's a Democratic socialist and has been for many years, but for his stance on fracking. I just don't know if that's a very big group of people. Of course, as one political scientist told me, Pennsylvania is so close in 2016 that any nudge one way or another could really turn the election.
This is Lucy. So when you were talking to voters, obviously you can't get in the minds of an entire group of people, but I'm curious how much fracking was a priority. Is this voters' number one issue? Is healthcare their number one issue? I mean, I'm just wondering how it competes with other issues when they're thinking about candidates.
You're right. I think the supposition that you're taking is correct. When I ask people, what are your main issues? You know, for folks who were more inclined to vote for Donald Trump, they would say, I just don't like the Democrats. I think they're giving too many things away to people. Free, free, free. For others, you know, is healthcare, the economy. You know, I mean, I feel like a fracking ban is sort of a secondary or maybe even a third order problem that people are facing. Another thing I'd like to say about the fracking issue in Pennsylvania is it doesn't really map strictly along party lines. I mean, you'll meet Democrats who are basically fine with it, you know, especially those affiliated with the trade unions that are really benefiting from this industry. And, you know, you'll also meet like Republicans who live close by to it and don't like certain aspects of it. Trying to figure out what voters in Pennsylvania think about this issue and come up with some sort of formula. I mean, good luck if you're trying to figure this out.
But nobody, when you were reporting this story, was like, yeah, this is how I'm picking my candidates.
None.
This is Sarah. I'll point out that during the 2016 election, there's a lot of conversation about Trump's trade policy and how he really favored unilateral versus multinational agreements. And in agricultural states, which really benefit from or would have really benefit from pacts like the Trans-Pacific Partnership, Trump carried those states. I think that could be really telling with how Western Pennsylvanians might think of fracking and the general election.
Right, because you're saying if people in Iowa are willing to sort of vote against their economic interests, why would communities in Pennsylvania not be willing to do the same thing if they had the right candidate?
Exactly. And, you know, different regions of the country, different types of people. But we have seen in a previous election that people do vote against their economic interests sometimes.
The other question I wanted to ask you, and it relates really to what Lucy was asking before, was, you know, there's always this issue when it comes to, say, gun rights, right? There are people, the vast majority of Americans say they would support various kinds of gun controls, but it never happens. And part of the argument for that is because while a lot of people are in favor of them, they don't really care that much, right? Whereas there's a very diehard set of people who are opposed to them. Do you have any sense of whether there's a similar condition here that Pennsylvanians who say, yeah, you know, I'm okay with a fracking ban, but it's not the issue that's going to drive me. Whereas if I'm somebody in Beaver County and I'm relying on that for my livelihood, that it matters a lot to me. Did you get a sense that there's an intensity gap there at all?
Yeah, I mean, most definitely. I mean, even just in the numbers, we had one poll where they broke it out by region. And by far, you know, the biggest opposition to fracking was like Philadelphia and Pittsburgh, Allegheny County. But outside of Pittsburgh, there was a real sentiment in favor of fracking, or rather, I should say, against a fracking ban. And I think that makes sense. You know, like maybe you don't work in the industry, but, you know people who've gotten some royalties, or, you know, that you've seen some more economic boost around you. You know, even people, I spoke with this one couple who were basically fine with the fracking ban. They'd had their water polluted temporarily when a well went in nearby them. You know, they were like, I don't want to see anybody lose their job, but I wish this industry could be done more safely or without the chemicals or whatever. So there's a real reticence, I think, which is understandable, that you don't want money taken out of your neighbor's wallet. But at the same time, you look at the counties where fracking is happening and where a lot of this is taking place. It's really a few counties in Southwest and Northeast Pennsylvania and North Central Pennsylvania. How many counties are there, Chris? Like
67.
67 counties. So you're talking, I don't know, 10 counties at max. And the rest of the people, I mean, they got other problems to worry about than what's happening in, you know, Westmoreland or Washington County.
Thanks, Reed. We'll be back in just a moment with In Other News.
Hey, it's Elsa Chang from NPR. Donating to the station makes a huge difference, but you don't need to overthink it. You already get so much out of public radio. Just go for it. Sign up as a sustaining member at WESA.FM.
It's time for the segment we like to call In Other News, where we find out that our reporters actually have lives and interests outside of what they talk about here by discussing stories they may be reading in other media. Lucy, let's start with you.
I'm going to talk about a podcast because I consume a lot of other stories via podcast, which is very on brand. This is a series from Radiolab, which is a very well-known radio show. They are doing a series right now called The Other Latif. One of the producers on their show is a guy named Latif Nasser. And the premise is he went on some website called like peoplewithyourname.com or something like that and searched his own name. And the results showed that there was like a weird number of other people who had his name. It was like, I can't remember if it was less than one or less than two, but he was basically like, how can there be less than two full humans? Anyway, so he did some research, and this other person who shares his name is a guy who is a detainee at Guantanamo Bay. And so he starts doing research and realizes that he has all sorts of things in common with this guy. They're really similar ages. He goes to Morocco and meets his family, and the sister says, you remind me so much of Latif. And it's a really wonderful series. Radiolab's really good at using sound, and the sound design is incredible. But it also kind of gives you a pretty rich history and better understanding of how the U.S. government talks about detainees at Guantanamo Bay. And also, this guy may or may not have been in contact with Osama bin Laden. And you learn about Osama bin Laden's, you know, sunflower farm in Sudan. And it's really fascinating. It's really interesting. I highly recommend it.
Sarah, what about you? I asked this question, what are you reading? Which is like a print question to ask. But so what media are you consuming?
I mean, honestly, this week, the only thing I've been consuming is coronavirus. But something I've really enjoyed with all the panic is the fact that people are now washing their hands more and not shaking hands, which I always have found. I shake a lot of hands at my work. And I kind of find that really gross, but it's rude not to. I'm really happy I don't have to shake people's hands right now.
But if you want like a nice one-on-one conversation with a cup of tea, you're there.
That's my sort of setting.
Read.
So a book I've been reading is this kind of heavy book called Oil, Power, and War. It's written by this French journalist. And it's basically about the awesome history of the big oil industry. And it's so central to understanding American and Western power throughout the world. And I learned so many, I should have known that Iraq was created by the Western powers to take their oil, but I did not know that. And you learn that big oil was involved with Nazi Germany and the Third Reich for a while. And I got a chance to actually interview the author, and we have that coming out on our podcast, Trump on Earth, this week. If you're not up for a 500-page book whose subtitle is A Dark History.
Sounds like a page turner.
We read the book so you don't have to. Here, yep. At 90.5 WESA. That's all we've got here on Pittsburgh Explainer. I'm Chris Potter. Thank you, Lucy, for joining us.
Thanks.
Thank you, Sarah.
Thanks, Chris.
And thank you, Reed.
Thanks, Chris.